from it, from day one to the end of the race. But notwithstanding the fact that he came close to destroying us as a political party, he didn't do anything insofar as the rules are concerned. It was tall reprehensible. He just read the damn things and played according to the rules, and that's the way you're supposed to operate when you're a pro. And people like Hubert Humphrey, whom I dearly love, may have comprehended the rules as an intellectual matter, but they never really absorbed what was being said. And they didn't act on it. They just somehow or another felt like they could do business as usual. You know, LBJ thought he could run for president by having friends from all the states that were senators. And he got up there and found out the damn senators hadn't delivered delegates. He had other things to do when it came time to select delegates. Well, Humphrey somehow or another felt like he could go around and pat governors on the head and win. And that wasn't the way it was. Now, Wallace felt like that he could go out and stir up big crowds and win. And that wasn't the way it was either. God damn it, you had to go out and do the technical things that were required. You had, if the delegates in Pennsylvania were elected individually, you had to have a candidate in every one of those individual precincts. And Wallace went to Pennsylvania and came out second in the number of votes. And he came out with two delegates. McGovern, who came out third, came out with some god-awful number, 30, 40, 50, something like that. And it was just a matter of not paying attention to the rules of the game. This time, the rules are cast in a different way that should help Wallace. Everywhere outside the South, he can now go anywhere in the United States in his quest for delegates and come out with some. The proportional representation concept indicates that if he's got 15% of the vote, he's supposed to get 15% of the delegates, or a proportionate number of the delegates.
That's in states with primaries.
And that's in states with anything, conventions, anything else. It's more applicable in convention states than it is in primary states. If you have a precinct meeting with 100 people there and you're naming 5 delegates to the county convention, if 20 of those people are Wallace people, they're supposed to have one of the delegates. It goes all the way down to the precinct level. This means that in Orange County, California, Wallace can go in and zero in, target that area, come out with some delegates out of California. Means that instead of getting 2 delegates out of Pennsylvania, he ought to get 50. It also means he gives up some inside. But it gives him the entire United States to play with, because he can afford now to go into Indiana and campaign Gary and come out with a satchel full of delegates from Gary, Indiana. Or go into, well, he thought he took the whole state of Michigan, but he can also hit all of the industrial states and go into areas where he can come out with delegates.
But isn't he still going to have to?
He's still got to put the pieces together.
He's got to have somebody down there doing organizational work, right?
Yeah, he's sort of light on staff, too. That's what got him in trouble on the state committee race.
Well, the experience in the state committee race also is a strong question about competence.
Yeah, it might have been the best thing that happened to him. I mean by that, it might have opened his eyes about the incompetence of his staff. He doesn't have Ed Ewing, he doesn't have Turnip Seed, and he doesn't have Bill Jones, and he doesn't have Cecil Jackson or Seymour Trammell, or the people that put all that complex stuff together in 67 for his 68 race. You've got Snyder, who's, I don't know anything much about his competency, just the name, so far as I've been able to tell. And that's it.
Where did Gerald Wallace fit into the whole picture?
He seems to be the leader of the faction, the outside faction. There's been an inside and an outside, the one inside state government and the one outside. And he comes and goes, and I think he's in favor and out of favor periodically, but Snyder and Moscow Upper and Frank Long, Whitey Weitzel, various others in the government have looked to Gerald Soder as their spiritual leader. And Red Bamberg and Pennington, a few others have looked to General Hardin. They're very different. I think Hardin is as straight as a die. I don't think he would not make any deals, but I don't think he would allow anybody else to make any deals, and he seems to have as his only wish that the government have a successful administration. I respect him a good bit. He'd cut my throat if he thought it was in the government's interest to do it, but he is a high caliber person. All of the habitual bag men that have been running around Montgomery all my life, the guys that have got asphalt to sell or want to build a whiskey store or something,
they're all opposed to Hardin.
Yeah, they like that other group, and that's the group that wanted to do me in. Maybe my judgment of them is a little harsher for that reason. I don't claim objectivity, but it got pretty tough down in Miami. I don't know what was going on because I wasn't inside of it. But I do know that the two factions got in such a fuss that one of them wouldn't let the other one on the floor where the company was staying. And the ambassador was there. And they, at that time, because the government wasn't very strong. And the Snyder group was in the saddle because it was down there at the National Convention, which is their area of operation. I assume when they got back to Montgomery that sort of the tide shifted a little bit. My information about that is hearsay.
What do you see as the role of the party?
The role of the party is to
in Alabama
is to man the store, that is to say, to conduct elections and maintain all of our traditional processes as an institution, that it will allow a majority of the people to select their governmental officials, is to maintain some sort of reasonable relationship with the national party and to conduct its affairs within the state and hopefully to promote it within the state. And it's to reach out and try to involve people in the government and open doors and do innovative things insofar as new people in the political processes.
Does that include candidate recruitment?
I don't recruit candidates except people from habitually underrepresented groups. And maybe we will in the future, just hadn't been there.
Does that mean you do recruit black candidates?
Yeah. Young candidates and women. This, of the older ones passing from the scene, well, they're not necessarily passing from the scene. But
do you think UW Clemens is the guy?
He's the comer, yeah. You get, if you want another view, a completely non-institutional view, Tony Harrison's a young Tiger that's been elected to the State House of Representatives, and he came out of nowhere, slap out of the, you know, he's a Kennedy type of guy that just swung in on his own. Arthur Shores and Judge Peter Hall are two that were here throughout all of the period of evolution that have been able to see it from the beginning to the end. Arthur Shores was the head black in this community for 23 years, and he voluntarily relinquished it 3 or 4 years ago to somebody else. It's a, the office of the local group that delivers the black vote, and he is really an outstanding guy. His home's been blown up a lot of times. You know, he was the original civil rights lawyer here. one that got off in Lucy in the university when they tried to tear it up back 20 years ago. And Peter Hall was right along with him insofar as time was concerned. They were the ones that Bull Connor would always go try to put in jail first. Now, Arthur is president pro tem of the city council, and Peter Hall is the city judge. And they're both still very active in statewide black affairs. Pete is vice president of the Alabama Democratic Conference. Arthur is on the state Democratic Executive Committee and a real power. Another guy here in Birmingham that you will find will have a fresh, non-institutional view of things, because he's from outside the black hierarchy, is Richard Arrington, Dr. Richard Arrington, who is an educator. He's on the city council, and he gets elected to things just on his own, and he wins in white districts, so does Arthur Shore. But those are some that you can get. That's five in Birmingham that would be between the five of them be representative of several different points of view and are very knowledgeable.
How would John LaFleur fit in?
He's an old whore down in Mobile that's been making money for lots of years by selling out to black people. You buy a place on what's called the pink ticket, and he puts it on the ballot.
Question on that. Do you buy a place or do you pay for the place after you get on there?
You buy it going in, on the front end. Green money.
How about in Birmingham?
Ain't none of that ever gone on.
How is the financing of getting out the black vote done in Birmingham?
Depends
on the cost.
Depends on what the race is. It's
a statewide election. Got all kind of races going on. Got legislative races.
We're not talking about a lot of money. We're talking about $1,000 to get the ballots printed up.
About carpooling and this sort of thing? Any of that?
They don't hit you up. There's one area out in Bessemer where...
Do they do that sort of thing?
Where they... Oh, yeah.
The organized carpool?
Yeah, and there's one area out in Bessemer where they'll hit up candidates for some expense money. But it actually goes for expenses. There's one little group out there that's a separate organization under Asbury Howard. That, as far as I've been able to tell, and I don't have close relations with them, but as far as I've been able to tell, is scrupulously honest. They'll get up $500, $1,000 in expense money, and they'll have cars out on the road using up that much or more gasoline. But the local Jefferson County Progressive Council has resources. It has rather wealthy backers.
Dave, the money comes from within the black community.
Yeah, I think the great portion. I make contributions on get out the vote campaigns in a general election, and in complicated situations, every once in a while, the party would make a contribution, but that would be for printing costs or something of that sort, and it's usually been a relatively small item. But they generate most, they don't come around with a handout up here, and that's been the thing that I've been so teed off about the Mobile crowd for. I think they've given, in Mobile, they've given black leaders a bad name, because their hand's been out all the time. And they put people on a ticket with no damn good from the black people's point of view, simply because they could make a deal with it. I'm not as disturbed about it as other black leaders are. But it's disturbed me that we had a big section of votes going, being bartered away that way. It's never existed in Birmingham. So far as I know, Montgomery does not have that problem to any significant degree. He's got a pretty clean leadership. I've disagreed with a lot of stuff that's gone on in Montgomery, but I haven't detected that sort of activity down there.
Where does John Cashin fit in?
Not at all, no. He fit in for a good while because he just saw some pretty good opportunities and cashed in. Cashin was a guy that couldn't make it on his own because he's basically an Oreo. He resents very much being a black man. And Jay Cooper's a little bit like John Cashin. One of the members of the state executive committee, a remarkable black woman, was talking to Jay a couple of weeks ago, and he was trying to talk her into doing something she wasn't going to do. And she says, well, Jay, you know what the folk say? They say it in the same. He said, what's that? I said, well, it looks like Jay's finally decided he's black after all. And that implies a lot more than you. It implies that up to now, Jay didn't know. Both of them were born into affluent, financially secure families. They went off and had a good education. They chose for their friends in the early part of their adult life, white people, and moved in white communities. And when they came back into the black community, it was with the idea of assuming specific leadership role. And both of them had difficulty in that they couldn't go through and therefore undertook to go around the existing black hierarchy. And John's opportunity was much greater than Jay's because it was an era when white people were acting like damn fools in a lot of states. To be a militant black leader just opened up all kind of possibilities. And he put together, he's just bright as he can be, a little bit nutty, but he's just smart as a damn whip. And he put together some pretty good stuff, and he had some good people backing him. He moved in Greene County when the white people wouldn't make reasonable accommodation. And he moved in two or three other counties, and then he was able to grandstand it from there. Now they've decided in Greene County they don't need him. And in Lowndes, they've returned pretty much to the party.
How about in Greene? Are they still running on?
Yeah, they're still running on third party, on their splinter party ticket there, and I think we'll work that out eventually. There's a problem in there's no reason that it can't be worked out now except one, as far as I can see. They have enough black incumbents, so they don't like the idea of running in primary. It's not in the interest of an incumbent to have an open primary.
What, did you nominate by convention?
They go out in the field and have a mass meeting. And it's pretty easy to get renominated. And then from then on, it's black versus white. And if you outnumber 6 or 8 to 1, it makes the whole process simpler. You start having a primary, some other black person's liable to run against you.
How, when you are out of Alabama, how often do you hear the question, has George Wallace really changed?
Fairly frequently.
How do you answer it?
I think all of us have changed. I'm not the guardian of his conscience. I don't know how his attitudes have changed. I know that his manner of presentation and the things that he said have changed a great deal.
How about the attitudes towards you, the Alabama Democratic Party, and Wallace? Have they changed in the last 8-10 years?
Attitudes by people or among?
I'm talking about people in the Democratic Party. Say like the state chairman, the meeting last week. Can you detect changes?
Yeah, they've changed toward Wallace. I was sort of a curiosity at first. I've enjoyed a pretty wide acceptance since I first got involved in national affairs. It's grown over a period of time, but at first I was just sort of, a freak. Who is this young fellow that got elected down there in Wallace's state? My hair was black 8 years ago, and I was a young fellow. And then I started getting elected to various things, taking part in various things, and I've not had any real problems by reason of the challenges against the state. I began trying to make build bridges with the more liberal elements of the party, because they didn't understand anything about what's going on down here, and they were casting stupid votes on the basis of bad information. And over a period of time, I guess I've gotten into sort of a unique position among Southern white leaders. I get along with the Southern white leaders, and I get along with the more liberal elements, and it's helpful.
Well, when people raise this question that Jack asked, you know, has Wallace really changed? And you say yes, do they believe you?
I don't know.
Why do you think he's changed? I mean, there's two possibilities. One, he's changed because it's in his self-interest to change. He gives him a better national image, more respectability, and that reading of election returns elsewhere in the South shows that very little will be gained in continuing no rhetoric. The other explanation, of course, is he's been shot. He's a man who has faced death, as the term is used, and this can have an effect on somebody.
Well, as a third alternative that's immediately apparent, and that is that the conditions in the world and in the United States have changed, and that all of us adapt to them to some degree. The attitudes of the people of Alabama have changed. The most appropriate action, if you were looking solely from the point of view of what is best for the people, probably would be an entirely different course than it was in 1962. Was that when he said segregation forever?
63.
January 63.
We're talking about change since 72, though.
I don't think he's changed much since 72, except that he's a matter of personality. There's a personality change that's gone through that would attribute to his injury. But from 72 to 74, I don't perceive that great change. My perception is of change is between 63 and 74.
What did his personality change?
Well, George is always a very feisty, aggressive type of fella in one-to-one dealing, and now he's a very soft-spoken, except when he gets excited about an idea. Quiet talking sort of fella that I would attribute to his physical difficulties. He doesn't lecture you now. You know, strut around. He's very, in some respects, almost humble. And in quiet conversation. At least gives that appearance. Now you get him revved up every once in a while, he'll revert to his old style to some degree. But I think he's been through enough so that anybody would have some sort of personality alteration. I'm sure I would if I were in his position.
Do you like to see the president or vice president?
I'm getting very philosophical about the word like. I'd like to see a Democrat elected. And aside from that, I'm not going to get involved in likes and dislikes. At this stage.
How would you feel if you were?
I don't know. I'll have to think about that a while. I am not persuaded that he is less competent than the likes of what we've had, particularly in the most recent year. And I wouldn't apologize for his confidence at that level. His style and his attitudes about an awful lot of things, not things, are not the same as mine. And I think when you say, what do you want? And the presidential level, you always have to say, what's my other choices? What's my other choice? Compared to what? If you ask me, would I prefer to have him as president to Richard Nixon, I'd say yes, without question. I think the country would be better off with him president than Richard Nixon. I just don't like crooks in the White House. It bothers me somehow. And I don't think George is a crook. He never has done anything, as far as I know, that was the least bit shady. That's one criticism I've never found justified in his case. One of the other ones I've participated in. So I have criticized him about other things.
When other state chairmen, when they meet, and the subject of George Wallace comes up, do they discuss him? Do you get a feeling they think of him in terms of him seriously being on the Democratic ticket in 1976?
No. Not until recently, and I can't really say recently whether that's true or not. They're looking more and more at that Harris poll, whoever spoke, and keep sort of scratching their head and wondering how they keep hanging in that second place. They received him rather well last week. And the discussion afterwards was an admiration, some of them sort of a grudging admiration, some a dislike, but most found something good to say about his appearance.
Is there any feeling on the committee that there should be a Southerner on the ticket? Not on the committee, but among the chairman, among the top people in the Democratic Party.
I have not heard that
Party.
Articulated a great deal. Chairmen are about as close as anybody we have to being party pros. They're not very. But they don't go around 2 years ahead of an election, 2.5 years ahead of an election, doing a lot of rash speculating. Out of 55 chairmen, when the nominees are all set, 48 of them will claim that was really who they were supposed to start with. That's just the nature of a chairman.
And yet the past indicates that whenever you take a vote with the state chairman or the county chairman long in advance of the convention, probably 8 chances out of 10 will be wrong.
That's not surprising.
That's a comment you could make about anybody involved in a political organization, I think.
They tend to vote the ones they're closest to, where their personal interest lies, who would look after my interest best, rather than other things.
What will it take for the Democratic Party to carry the South again in the presidential election?
Well, you can't say what one thing. It could be any one of several things. It could be a George Wallace heading the ticket. It would carry every state. It could be a George Wallace in number two position on the ticket with somebody that's not just totally unacceptable. It could be a slightly offensive candidate from the Southern point of view with another Southerner on the ticket and a tip of the hat to George. It could be a sort of a middle of the road candidate and another Southerner on the ticket. It could be people from completely out of the South and nothing to the South, provided the Republicans mess up enough. So it's, there's no single answer to that. I don't know who the Republican nominees are going to be. I assume Ford. He doesn't have any built-in support here. Reagan would be the only contender that would have built-in support, I would think. Rockefeller would make it easy. A guy like Percy would make it easy. Rockefeller might put a fellow like Baker on the ticket. It would not do really much but make it a little more difficult.
What would Kennedy do?
Kennedy causes probably the most problems in this area. I don't suggest that he causes most problems nationally. I don't really know, but in this area, there's probably less Kennedy support than there would be for Jackson, for example.
You seen any state polls on that?
Yeah, I've taken some.
They reflect that?
Yeah. Consider themselves to be liberal, 49% consider themselves to be moderate, and 38% consider themselves to be conservative. Richard Nixon was considered to be more liberal than the average Alabama voter. He was perceived by the Alabama voter to be more liberal. At that time, 24% perceived him to be liberal, 43% moderate, and 33% conservative. John Conley was considered to be more liberal than Richard Nixon, which is an interesting fact. 27% perceived him to be liberal, 43% moderate, and 30% conservative. Edward Kennedy was perceived by 66% of the Alabama voters to be liberal, 24% moderate, and 10% conservative. So that you have, according to the perception of the Alabama voter, less identity with Senator Kennedy than with any of those persons that I've mentioned. I did not do a great deal of polling with respect to other national figures. The purpose of the polling, which I did in December and January, had nothing whatever to do with the presidential election. And the polling that was done was merely for the purpose of setting the stage and establishing the mood of the voter.
What did it show self-perception in terms of party identity?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're going to find that it's, I can give you an approximation. It's about 46% Democratic, 15 and 16% Republican, and the rest independent. There's been virtually no change in the Republican identity since I was born. But there's been a steady decline in the Democratic identity, a fairly steady decline, ever since 1944, I guess. So the drain has been out of the Democratic column into the independent column. Now, the Republican did go up for a little while in late Eisenhower years and early 60s, I guess, but it came back down. The people of this state were not at all interested in the president being impeached or resigning. I've got some job ratings, if I can find them. People in Alabama didn't particularly believe Nixon at that time, but they didn't think anything should be done about it. Governor Wallace's job rating in December of 73 was 37% excellent, 38% pretty good, 19% fair, 5% poor, 1% not sure. It nets out at 76% favorable, 24% unfavorable. Which sounds extraordinarily high, gauged by comparisons with other officials in other states. But a peculiarity of Alabama is that it rates all of its officials very high.
Do you have anything in there on Sparkman and Allen?
Yeah. The trust index. The next one that I was going to give you. And I just bring out fine job ratings on it. job ratings on Allen were 79% favorable, 21% unfavorable. Sparkman, 73% favorable, 27% unfavorable. I don't understand that dip. It had gone up as high as 81% in his case.
How about Nixon at that time?
Is that the Bill Hamilton that you're pulling?
No, Oliver Quayle.
There's something strange about that. I've been in the polling business for
10% favorable, 61% unfavorable in December. And that was a switch. In May, it had been 60% favorable, 40% unfavorable. The trust index was Wallace and Allen 76% apiece, Sparkman 74, Brewer 71, Walter Cronkite 70, some lesser known characters.
How about Nixon?
In between, Richard Nixon 51, which was down from 62 in May, Edward Kennedy 49.
That interesting. Cronkite usually is number one in every other state and nationally. He's always highest.
How is the question phrased?
I think it's who do you trust, or how well do you, or do you trust these people? No, I didn't. I'm sorry. On a scale rating from 1 to 6, where number 1 score signified trust wholeheartedly and number 6 signified don't trust at all. And I don't know how they went about tabulating. They applied a weight, which they explain in here, which is fairly complicated. And that's sort of the mood of the voter. And I don't have anything else, and I'm not sure that I will ever have anything else which will relate to other nominees. I did not suggest that there be any polling concerning Senator Kennedy. They were just doing that just like Walter Cronkite. They were trying to throw it in to see where we stood.
Does most of the party financing here come from filing fees?
About 60% of it. When I went to office, 100% did. But we've generated other sources of revenue now.
Through what means?
We have reinstituted the fundraising dinners, which they hadn't had for 10 years when I became chairman. And they're profitable.
How many of you have?
We have about one a year now.
Where is it? Birmingham?
Yeah, Birmingham. We have a Democratic club, which I told my staff would never work. And they took in over $20,000 this year on where you send out a direct mailing and ask them for $24 a year, for which you get almost nothing. But cost of about $3,000, they've taken in 24, I think, which is a damn sight better than anybody else I know that's done on direct mailing. And we've made money on the telethons. Made about a net profit on this most recent one. It's about $17,000, and we made about 9 or 10 on the first one.
What's your budget?
It's about, in round figures, I'd say $40,000 in an off year and $60,000 in an election. So about $200,000 in a four-year span.
Do you provide any candidate services?
Very little. We target some. We provide prime candidates with specific services, but it's usually just an indirect way of furnishing financial aid. We're starting into that this year. We're going to start setting up a service center and try to do something like Florida's undertaking. But
is Florida ahead of anybody in the South on that?
Yeah, Florida's ahead of everybody in the country in what they're trying to do. I haven't been able to judge how far along they are, but the program they got is the most sophisticated program in the country, I think, with the exception of maybe Minnesota.
How are filing fees set by the state?
State committee subject to a statutory maximum, which is what we apply.
Which is how much?
2%. That's another advantage Florida has. It charges 5%. A bigger state with a bigger salary. So they have a hell of a built-in filing fee fund.
But the state absorbs the full cost of the election.
That's
itself.
Right. That's right. We take an absolute free ride, which is almost unique We keep all the filing fees except county offices, which the county committees keep. And we get all the filing fees. Now, the services that we, campaign service that we have been able to perform in sort of a unique way in the past, which has been particularly beneficial since the 60s, has been the promotion of a straight ticket campaign, which has saved people a good bit of money. And nobody can do it but the party, because people were breaking out of a tradition where everybody ran their own race and nobody really trusted anybody else. We've been able to do that very successfully in some areas. For example, in Jefferson County, we, in all of the general elections, been able, where we had any significant opposition, been able to run straight ticket campaigns where all of the legislative candidates and all the statewide candidates and everybody threw money in a hat and we collected it and bought advertising, and they ran their own races too, but we were able to absorb a lot of the brunt by doing that.
There's a Republican position that we hear repeatedly that they had only run one candidate in 1966 against Sparkman, regardless whether it had been Martin or Grenier, and had not run a candidate for governor that they would have won. How do you respond to that?
I think it's horseshit. They can tell you 15 different ways if they hadn't done this or that. And I just don't believe it. I don't think what they did was too bright, but there was a lot of crossover voting in those two races. And Sparkman didn't appear to be in that much trouble.
Why did Red Blunt fare so poorly?
Two reasons. Sparkman's a pretty decent candidate, and Blunt's an awful one.
As a campaigner?
No, as a candidate. It's candidate material. He doesn't identify with the people of Alabama. You go out in the mill and ask somebody, what you think of Red Blunt? Blunt doesn't know how to identify with the working man. He thought taking his coat off and having a shirt sleeve picture put on the billboard would do it. And hell, that just made a funny looking billboard. He tried to do it in a superficial way. And he's not a redneck, or if he is, he's forgotten how to act like one. He doesn't know how to get on a common man's level. He doesn't want to. He's an arrogant prick. And, you know, some people have got enough self-control. If they know how to play the game, they can be an arrogant prick and maybe act like something else. Well, Red's an arrogant prick that ain't smart enough to know what he ought to do different, and he just acts like himself.
What was the second reason?
Sparkman's a good candidate. Sparkman, there wasn't any trouble.
There were two reasons. Sparkman's a good candidate.
And Red's a bad
one.
Yeah. They couldn't have beat Sparkman with anybody. He just never was in any trouble.
Poll showed that?
Yeah. Sparkman was in trouble in the early years of his service because he was thought to be too liberal. How in the hell can you make a man out to be too liberal when all the bankers in the country, according to Jack Anderson, are frothing at the mouth for fear he's going to get beat? You know, things take funny, go in funny cycles, but there just wasn't any way to get at Sparkman. He's sort of become an institution, and nobody's mad at him, and he's doing a pretty good job. And they don't, he doesn't work at it like Allen does, but he just hadn't gotten in any trouble. Not within the last 10 years or so. What's the big issue to get at Sparkman? The guy that would have given us the most trouble was the man that ran third in the primary.
Who was that?
A young fellow named Nettles.
Oh, Bert Nettles?
Yeah. And Bert could have run on one issue only, and that's age. If he'd had sense enough to run on age alone. And vigorous, represent all the things that are connected with that. That would probably have given us more trouble than anything else. Because Sparkman is getting along a little bit, you know. I think he was 73 in that race. gives you a twinge every once in a while worrying about where they're going to come at you from on that issue. And they did say some dumb thing. God, like, they got caught fabricating a tape about 4 days before the election. And the thing just blew sky high. I don't really know how it blew sky high. Because ordinarily, you would, you know, when somebody comes out with something scurrilous, you would think that the truth, you'd never catch up with it. But this one just boomeranged like crazy, and they were just caught red-handed. They asked Bachman on some interview program, what do you think of busing? And he said he was against it, and so and so and so and so. And they asked him several other questions, and then he said, well, what about so and so? And he said, yes, I'm very much for that. And they just whacked out the center portion, sliced it together. What do you think of busing? I'm very much for that. Put it on a paid political advertisement. I mean, those people didn't know the difference between right and wrong. They just liked those crooks up there in the White House.
How do you assess the press in the state in terms of political reporting?
And Mobile is incompetent. And maybe a little corrupt, I'm not sure. I sort of have had the impression from time to time that some folks down there were on somebody's payroll. I think they have had a few people that supplemented their income as consultants to the state docs or something like that. In Montgomery, we have usually had better political reporters for the Montgomery papers than you would think a paper that size could sustain. There are a few really top-flight reporters that come out of there. In Birmingham, we've had some excellent individual reporters. It's been spotty. We have one or two pros here that